This is episode 425, dated Friday, August 15th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. I am Bob Branco. Glad to be with everybody today. This is episode 425, dated Friday, August 15th, 2025. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter Alchel. Peter, what's going on?
Not much. Thanks. Welcome to the show, everybody. Let's see. It's actually a bit unusual here. We're actually going to get some rain in Coos Bay. Usually the rainy season doesn't start until October, but we're getting a bit of rain for a couple of days, and then we'll get back to our summer weather in the 60s during the day and the 50s at night.
Well, it sounds like you folks need the rain anyway. If it's going to wait till October, you know, yeah. It means you need it. So I'm glad it's happening, even if it's only for 2 days. That's better than nothing. We are sunny and dry. The humidity has broke. It's been a hot, humid week, but hopefully that will change. We're going to have some now dry weather for a couple days or so, and that's good. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do, along with our media outlets. Thank you for airing our shows when you do it. It's much appreciated. I also want to thank Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions for archiving our programs on my website. Just go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcast. Click on them, and you will get to notice most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I would like to say hi to Trish, our host for today's program, along with Brad, our streamer for today's program. And because we are being streamed live, it's important that we give out the email address for listeners who would like to write to us, because we always encourage our listeners to send us their thoughts about our podcasts. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. We are very pleased to have back with us Abby Taylor from Wyoming. She is an author, and she's going to talk to us today about her latest book called Living Vicariously in Wyoming. Welcome, Abby.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Bob. And Peter, it's good to be here.
I have a question and a comment. I'll make my comment first. And this is nobody's fault. It's just that Wyoming is one of the least familiar states in the United States that I'm most familiar with. And you'll be talking to us a lot about that state today, so I'm going to learn a lot. And my other thought was, tell us what vicariously means.
Actually, living vicariously means living someone else's life through them. Yes, and so in these stories, as in anything else I write, I'm inviting readers to live these people's lives vicariously by reading their stories.
I see.
Abby, talk about, Bob was talking about Wyoming. Most of us don't know much about Wyoming. Talk about what Wyoming is like. You know, why is Wyoming such an important state? What's Wyoming kind of like?
Well, we have a lot of wide open spaces. We do have some urban areas, but most of our state is wide open. It's rural. We have some lovely mountains. You know, before the call, people were talking about Yellowstone Park, also the Grand Tetons. Canyon is there. It's just a beautiful place to be.
And talk about the weather.
I'll tell you this. When we moved here in 1973 from Arizona, one of the reasons we moved here was to get away from the Arizona heat. In the summertime, the heat was relentless and it rarely cooled off at night. Whereas here, the beautiful thing about the summers here in Wyoming is no matter how hot it get, it usually cools down to maybe about at least 60 degrees, maybe cooler. And that's what makes it so much more pleasant.
And there are a lot of mountains in Wyoming, too.
Yes. Yes, there are.
Now, if you live on the mountains, I'm assuming the weather is not as hot.
Well, yeah, that's right. It can be a bit cooler up there on the mountains. Yes, absolutely.
And the winters in Wyoming?
They can get kind of snowy and cold, but not nearly as cold as North Dakota. I spent 6 months in North Dakota doing a music therapy internship, and during that winter, the high was 20 below zero. So, but it doesn't usually get that cold here, at least not often.
Get a lot of snow, though, I bet.
Yes, we do.
Of course.
Yeah. And talk about, isn't my Wyoming, I think it's oil or something?
We do have oil wells near Casper, yes. And then we have a coal mine here out east of Sheridan, north of Sheridan where I live. There is a coal mine. And those are, I think, they are basically our main industries.
And so Wyoming is a state that, as I said, many of us really have not know much about. My only acquaintance with Wyoming is that my friend's college roommate was from Wyoming, came to school I attended, but that's about all I know about Wyoming, except for, of course, politically, there are some fairly famous people from Wyoming, the Cheneys in particular.
Right.
But that's,
yes,
that's
Liz Cheney is from our neck of the woods. Yeah.
That's right. She is. And she was quite a famous, or is quite a famous character.
Yes.
For lots of reasons, which we don't have to talk about now. Your prior books have been novels, correct?
Well, I have, two novels. And then three novels and two poetry collections and a memoir. And so this is the first short story collection that I have published.
Yeah, so talk about that. What prompted you to sort of attack sort of the short story form after, you know, poetry and memoirs and, as you said, novels?
Well, several years ago, I read a collection of short stories by Anne Beattie called The State We're In. And these are stories set in Maine. And after I read these stories, I thought, well, why don't I write a similar collection of stories set in Wyoming? I'd already written a few stories that take place in various parts of the state, and I was inspired to write a few more. And I ended up with 25 stories, and that's basically how it just came together.
And the themes, there are, of course, many different themes that take place in the book. What is the mood you hope to aim at in the book? You know, is this supposed to be a happy, cheerful book? Is it supposed to be a somber book? What is the general mood you're sort of aiming for in this book?
Well, all the stories are different. Some of them are happy. Some of them are sad. I think just the idea is that, you know, ordinary people can find themselves in ordinary and not so ordinary situations. And the stories are about how these get resolved or not.
Yeah, or not is
yeah, yes, yes.
Is often the key word. So there are, well, I guess let's talk about your life. As I understand, these books are, this is not a memoir. These are short stories.
Right.
But people often write about what they know. How sort of autobiographical, or how much of your life can you find in these stories?
Well, a few of them are inspired by life events. For example, my story, A Day of Firsts, was inspired when I read a local newspaper article about how local residents were rounded up and hauled into court in handcuffs and leg irons for failing to appear for jury duty. And of course, that was one of my worst fears, especially when my late husband was alive, because if that happened to me, how would I, you know, arrange to get his care? And so that kind of inspired that story. And, you know, some of the others are just, like I say, inspired by different things that happen in my life, things that I've seen in the news, and just other things.
Sure, I got distracted. I was thinking about this when reading your book, when I, because I've, have a couple of books published having to do with essays, short essays, which are not quite the same thing as short stories, but one of the things I spent a lot of time thinking about was how to structure the book. What came first? What came second? What came third? What was the climax? What was the whatever? So in my case, I had a number of essays and sort of 10 parts based on categories. And so I would put the essays regarding categories and then try to figure out how to best tell the story in each category, which came first, which came second, which came third, and how did I want to leave the reader at the end of each section. Talk about how you decided to structure, put one story first and one story second, and sort of how you thought that through.
Well, I decided to not have, you know, the stories, because I have stories that are told from first person point of view. I have stories that are told from third person point of view, and I've got stories that are about different themes. And I tried not to, you know, have stories with the same points of view and theme structure together. So it was kind of a tricky business, figuring out which story should go after what story. And, but I just, you know, and I did have to do some shifting around a few times when I thought that maybe that, you know, wasn't going to work, but it eventually just all came together.
So for clarification, it's based on real life.
Some of the stories are based on real life. Some of the stories are inspired by items in the news. And the concluding story in the book was actually inspired by a weird dream I had years ago. So they're just different things that inspire these stories.
Yeah, I could see how that last story would be inspired by a weird dream. Talk about that story a little bit.
I'm curious too.
somebody goes to Wyoming not wanting to be there in the first place.
Right. Well, see, this is it. And I don't want to give too much away, but right. The story is called Welcome to Wyoming, and it's about a college student returning home after graduation who is suddenly kidnapped just because she stops to help a woman and her children, and the father is kind of losing it, and he forces her into his van with the kids and the wife at gunpoint and takes off. And I'm not going to say anything more. And no, so, yeah.
You give away the story. Yeah, right. It is sort of a curious way to end the book.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that, you know, it is sort of a weird way to end the book is, you know, you want to end the book on sort of a scary, kind of weird way, sort of an interesting way to end the series of short stories.
Well, it's funny you should say that because, you know, I wasn't quite sure what to do with this story. I've had it critiqued a few times and people said, it doesn't work, it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I've tried this and that ending. It doesn't work, it doesn't work. Finally, I figured, oh, to heck with it. I'm just going to go with the original ending and it'll be the last story in the book. So if people are put off, then that'll be it. They won't have to read anymore.
No, So there are a number of themes in the book that I found interesting. Let's start with the first one, Living Vicariously Wyoming, which is the title story and the first story of the book.
Yes.
There are a number of things that sort of that come up that in different ways throughout the book. Betrayal for starters, right?
Right. And, right.
All kinds of things. Talk about that story. And, how you think that might, set up the book, the rest of the stories.
Okay. Well, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but the first one is about a lawyer. And first of all, he finds out that his daughter hasn't been going to confirmation classes. And then the story just kind of, you know, twists and turns with different things. We find out about, you know, the mother's relationship with a nun. And then of course there's a climactic ending, and that's really all I'm going to say about that. But that's kind of, I'll tell you that that story, was one of a couple that were inspired by, a play by Tennessee Williams called The Glass Menagerie, which my mother directed here at the local college years ago when I was in high school. And I was always taken with the idea there's a scene in that play where Laura, the daughter, pretends to go to business school after she goes, and she has an incident where they have a typing test and she's just so nervous that she gets sick to her stomach and throws up all over the floor. And then she doesn't go back, but she doesn't tell her mother. But then her mother finds out one day when Laura is sick, and the mother goes to the business school to explain why Laura isn't there and finds out she hasn't been going there. And Laura, of course, isn't a teenager. She's an adult at this point, but she's living at home. This is in the 1920s, and she's living at home with her mother and her brother, and they're poor, and they're just trying to get by from one day to the next, and so on and so forth. So but the idea of deceiving your mother like that always intrigued me, but I've never had the courage to deceive my own mother that way, but I just always found that intriguing. And so that actually inspired a couple of the stories in that book.
I've heard of the glass menagerie, but I'm not familiar with the details, but that does ring a bell. Yes.
Yeah.
Deception takes a number of different forms in the series, right? You have that, the opening story. You have another story. I think it's class reunion.
Yes.
There's a different kind of deception, perhaps.
It's not, I don't have the book divided into sections per se, but the class reunion, it's kind of the same thing. It's about it's about infidelity. As you can tell. And again, this is another lawyer. Don't ask me why I write about lawyers, but they just seem to be so easy to write about. But yeah, another lawyer who, you know, actually considers this. And the ending, another one of those where the ending is kind of up in the air.
Well, we know the direction that it's headed, certainly. I don't know the plot, but it's, it's not this kind of situation where people go to the reunion and then go home and live happily lives necessarily.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
There's something that happens in that story. But you can view that as deception as well. And then there's that, the opening book, of course, the opening story has to do with deception. And then there's another story. I can't remember the title that actually.
It's called A Play of Deception.
This is the
same thing, except this time you've got a mother deceiving her daughter. This is an elderly mother who's living in assisted living, and she doesn't like being around the other residents there. She doesn't think she likes them, and she doesn't want to. She's visually impaired, and she uses a walker. She's not very comfortable getting out. Her daughter's trying to get her to go out. And so the mother deceives the daughter into thinking that she is going to an adult daycare facility. And then of course, when the mother gets sick, the daughter goes to the daycare and finds out that the mother hasn't been going there. So the same thing, kind of the same thing. And this one has a rather interesting ending. And again, this is kind of centered around, the glass menagerie.
Well, I don't know if this is the same story you and I are thinking about, but, the glass menagerie actually is plays a part in the story where the daughter pretends that she's playing the lead role in the play.
And then the mother present and I hate to give away spoilers, but the daughter does this after she discovers that the mother has been deceiving her into thinking he's going to the adult daycare facility.
Yeah, so the deception.
Yeah, it's a double deception.
It's a double deception.
It's a double deception. Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Then there is quite a lot of talk about two topics that are controversial.
Right.
One has to do with, I think it's primarily lesbian relationships.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So talk about that.
That's Heaven Help Me. And this is about a teenager who becomes pregnant and her father doesn't want anything to do with her. And so he ships her off to live in sin with her cousin, who is a lesbian and has a partner. And I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but it's kind of about, you know, how she, is accepted and, and she accepts the cousin despite the relationship, even though the rest of the family kind of turn their backs on them. They're she and the two cousins now or the cousin, her partner are together, and heck with the rest of them. That's kind of the idea there.
And that's not despite the relationship. It's because of the relationship, it seems to me. I mean, the daughter comes from a loveless relationship?
Kind of a strict Catholic upbringing. Yes. After her mother passed 3 years before the story starts, the father, you know, just she didn't, it was kind of been more distant and strict, and, you know, they didn't have the loving relationship they used to have when her mother was alive. She realizes this while after she, you know, gets pregnant and comes to live with her cousin. So.
Yeah. And that, and then there's another, at least one more that I can think of, having to do with, Baker's Choice, as I remember it's
called.
Yes,
that is Baker's Luck. That, yeah, now that was inspired. There was an article in a Colorado newspaper, or I picked up, I think probably heard on National Public Radio, in Colorado, a baker actually refused to make a cake for a less, I don't know if it was a less, homosexual couple. I can't remember if they were lesbians or,
That's happened in a lot of places.
Yeah. And so I got one of those what if moments. Okay. What would happen after, you know, what would happen if the people in that community kind of, you know, turned against the baker in a way? And so that's kind of how this came about. And again, I don't want to give away too much more about the story, but that's, you know, kind of, it's kind of, you know, what would happen if.
And it seems to be, this is another example of deception coming into play in a different kind of way.
That's, yeah, that's true. That's true. You're right. I hadn't really thought of it that way. You're right. Yes.
I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to give away this story, but it is one of the more intriguing stories in the book. That's another theme in the book. And the other theme that got my attention, and there are several books like this, are domestic violence. You write
absolutely
about domestic violence.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thankful to have never been a victim, but I've known people who have been. And so I have been, you know, every once in a while, I've been, inspired to write such stories with positive endings, as opposed to, you know, you hear a lot of negativity about domestic violence. So I just, you know, I wanted to write, you know, a few that, you know, have some positive outcomes where there's hope.
Yeah, the one I'm remembering is called Gloves, which is the second story in the series.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And again, you know, it is a stunning book,
yes.
A stunning story about,
thank you.
You know, how gloves, well, I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, it's, and then there are other stories too, that where domestic violence comes into play in a major way. And then there's where it's really physical violence, you know, where it's really kind of nasty, right?
Right. Exactly.
There are other stories where they may not be, domestic violence per se, but there might be, you might be called psychologically abusive.
Right.
At least situations where the marriage is not very good.
Right.
And, you know, there is one, I can't remember the title, where the wife wants to go visit her, I think it's her father who had just had
surgery. Yes. Okay.
And, you know, so talk about that. I mean, you know.
Okay. That is called Her Decision. And that's one of the ones that, you know, it does kind of end a bit more positively, but yes, she feels a need to go take care of her father who's having open heart surgery. And he doesn't want, you know, her to, he needs her to help him in the store because he's been, you know, since his father, you know, never had help. He wants to kind of follow in his father's footsteps and run it without help. And so he needs her in the story. And he's just, you know, but it does end on a more positive note.
A positive, but sort of enigmatic note, as I remember.
Yeah. Know. Yes. Yes.
Not, it doesn't end, we all live happily ever after mode.
No, but
it's in a terrible way either, but it doesn't.
So, Abby, these stories that you're describing are based on experiences that you heard about directly or indirectly?
Well, like I say, it depends. Now, this particular one that I just talked about, it was actually inspired by a prompt. And the prompt was something like, after 9 years, Mary knew it was difficult to, she shouldn't ask her husband for anything at Christmas time. But she knew she had to, or something like that. And of course, when I saw that prompt, my own father was having to have open heart surgery, and my late husband was still with me, but he needed my care, and dad needed someone to be with him, in Rochester, Minnesota to have his open heart surgery, but there was just no way I could leave Bill indefinitely, even if, you know, I could put him in the nursing home, but now I kind of wish that I had, but back then I was feeling guilty about it. And that's kind of where how this story came about. And it originally started out as a novel, but then I kind of got stuck and decided to make it into a short story.
And then you have, I just lost my train of thought. And then you have a weird, well, not weird, but interesting story called, I think it's Dinner with the Johnsons.
Yes. Now that is the third in a trilogy of stories about Al Johnson and his family. And this particular story was inspired by a nasty habit my father had when I was growing up. He would always invite people over for dinner or, you know, decide to have a party or something without checking my mother first. And that always irritated her. And so thinking about this a few years ago, when I wrote the story, this is another one. What if? And so that's how that story came about.
And let's just say that the father, cooking skills don't quite, measure.
No,
up,
absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And, the mother does sort of come home to, the wife to sort of save.
Right.
The
yes. Order. Yeah. But like I say, I really hate to give away any spoilers because I want people to read and find out the endings for themselves.
Oh, yeah. Of course you do.
Yeah. Exactly. And then there's one story that I suspect, that is autobiographical, and that's the story called Teach and Learn. It's what I found really interesting about that story is it's really the only story like that in the book. Talk about that.
This is actually a fictionalized, in a way, a fictionalized account of one summer I spent at the Wyoming Lions Summer School for the Visually Impaired, which is a camp on Casper Mountain. And years ago, they had an adult program and I attended several times and was able to learn some skills, but also have some fun. And so this is a place where children and adults can go to learn, you know, like mobility, daily living, computers, Braille, what have you. And so one summer I was actually hired to teach Braille, and originally I was supposed to teach social problems, but the Braille instructor became ill, and the camp director whom I'd known for years was desperate, and he called me and says, I know you can do this. You know Braille. So all you have to do is just figure out how to teach others. Okay, I'll give it a try. I'll try it. And I did. I discovered in those two weeks that I could teach Braille. And I know now that if I were called upon to teach creative writing or computers or something, you know, I have the knowledge. I just have to figure out the best way to impart that knowledge to others. And so it's about, you know, the story is about how this character, you know, she's the same way. She's never taught Braille before, but she learns in that 2 weeks that she can teach Braille. And, you know, and I would imagine that afterwards, like me, she would think, well, she had to teach something else like music or computers or creative writing or whatever. And, you know, as long as she has the knowledge of the subject matter, she can just impart it to others. You know, it is possible to do it.
Well, hold on for a second. Yeah, so I'm going to. Okay, never mind. Okay, sorry. I was asked a question which I can't answer right now because I'm recording a podcast. There was another story that story, the Teach and Learn, sort of does really, truly does have a happy ending. You know, it's one of the few that really does have a happy ending where the student,
right,
you know, actually writes the instructor a letter in Braille.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And
yes.
I thought that was a really sort of,
now that actually did not happen to me. That's the part I made up.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is pretty much based on my experience with it. The ending is what I just, that's pure fiction is the ending.
And the other story that has I thought a really sort of uplifting ending, which I thought was wonderful, had to do with, a person who I think it's with their daughter or son, goes trick-or-treating.
Ah, yes, All Hallows Eve. Yes, yes, exactly. And that was actually inspired by a prompt from Wyoming Writers, which is an organization here in the state to which I belong. And they offer these biweekly flash fiction prompts. And so that story was inspired by that. That's never happened to me. And of course, you read about this kind of thing happening, you know, in fiction, but it's never, I don't think it ever happens in real life. That's one of those purely fantastical stories.
Yeah, right. That didn't happen to you in real life.
No.
I have a sense that a life sort of weaves through all the stories, even though you haven't, unfortunately, have had to deal with domestic violence or blatant deception or, some of the other themes in the book. You know, there are pieces of your life that sort of come through in ways. So for example, that in Hallows Eve, the person, one of the characters has to do with, is it a mystery writer or a romantic library?
No, Hallows Eve, no, I don't, there's nobody, there aren't any writers in that. There's just a mother and her daughter that have had to leave their home in Florida because of a hurricane, and the father left them. And so they came to, Sheridan, Wyoming to live with the mother's parents. I don't have a lot of information about the mother and the daughter because it's mostly about, you know, the Halloween, you know, what happens when they go out trick or treating.
Right. But then the next day, there's a little, a pizza arrives or something, and then they go back from one house to another.
Oh, you know what? Oh, no. I think you might be, you're talking about two stories. There's a story called Triggered by an Irish Setter, where a woman starts to develop a romantic relationship with a neighbor because his dog barks and wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and she's got an Irish setter and he's got an Irish setter, and the two dogs get together and they get, that's where the pizza comes in, because he shows up on her doorstep with his dog and a pizza.
You are correct about that. I mixed up or
that's okay.
Combined two different stories. Yeah. Well,
that's okay.
Yeah. No, but you're right about that. But I just sort of like the way the parallels in that story, you know, where the dogs like each other and the people.
Right, right.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Abby, I think this is a good time for you to tell us, and you can tell us later on, of course, but how can we get your book?
Well, my book is available, on Amazon and Smashwords. It's also available on Bookshare. And the easiest way to find it is to go to my website, which is https://www.abbiehonsontaylor.com. That's abbyjohnsontaylor.com. And if you click on the books link, you will find links to pages for each of my books, and on those pages you will find links to where you can purchase or obtain the books from various sources.
And you can mention that later on before we finish.
I will definitely do that.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
We have people who are likely waiting to ask you questions that are in the audience right now. And what I would like to do is ask Trish if there are any hands raised. But before I actually do that, let me just remind people that you're listening to In Perspective, and our featured guest is Abby Johnson Taylor, author of Living Vicariously in Wyoming. Trish, do we have anybody ready to talk to Abby?
Currently, there are no hands.
No hands?
Wow.
Oh,
I must be doing a great job then if nobody has any questions. Oh. That's maybe not a bad thing.
Well, Trish, when that changes, please feel free to interrupt us and let us know.
And actually, we just, the hands are now coming.
Now they're going up.
All right. So let's
see. That's the way it goes.
How many hands do we have?
Kishia? K-I-S-H-I-A?
Oh, Kishia. Hello. She's from behind our eyes, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes. That's who that is. Hello, Kishia.
Hello. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
And now lower.
Yeah. I actually read your book. I really enjoyed, the one of the stories, the how did you come up with was it pregnant?
Who?
Pregnant.
Present.
No, pregnant.
Pregnant.
Oh, pregnant. Oh, pregnant. So, pregnant. Yes. Oh, yeah, gosh. I read an article years ago in Reader's Digest where this gentleman talked about how back in the good old days, his fifth grade English teacher had them read Grapes of Wrath, which I think might have been a little young for kids to be reading that book, but
we read it too at Perkins. We read it too at Perkins.
Okay. In the fifth grade?
No, more
okay,
like.
Okay, yeah, see. But school. See, yeah, this gentleman, his fifth grade English teacher wanted them to write essays about the Grapes of Wrath. But the English teacher did not like him using the word pregnant. Now, in that particular article, Reader's Digest article that I read and story I read, which is a true story, you know, his mother said, well, you need to do what the teacher says. And so he had to make Rosa Sharon not be something else besides pregnant, like in the family way or with child or whatever. And, you know, I've got to thinking after I read that, you know, my parents would not have stood for that. If my English teacher had had me write about the Grapes of Wrath when we read it in high school and she said, don't use pregnant, my parents would have been livid. They would have raised the roof. They would have, you know, gone to the school board if necessary. So I thought, okay, what if this teenage girl was in the situation and the family and her family actually moved, like my family, moved from Arizona to Wyoming for the purpose of seeking better life, just like the family in the Grapes of Wrath moved from Oklahoma to California. And so kind of putting that theme into this story. And I don't want to say anything more, but that's how that came about. So I hope that answers your question, Keisha.
That is Paul Stanley.
And by the way, there's also some deception in that story too, I think.
Well, a little bit, maybe. Yes, yes.
I think you could argue that there is. And,
yes.
It's just an interesting way to look at it. Anyway, I couldn't help but reading that story that, you know, maybe pregnant is now a word that everybody uses, but
oh, yeah.
I would bet that there are words that some people might use that might
in
be controversial
family,
in
the family way is one that I used to hear in the family
yes.
way.
Oh yeah. 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 Exactly.
But I guess what I'm saying is pregnant is now, you know, is not that controversial.
Oh yeah.
Word.
It's, oh no, no.
But there are other words out there that are controversial that some teachers, you know, wouldn't like and whose parents, you know, whereas parents and kids might disagree.
Right. Right.
So yeah.
Anything else, Keisha?
Hold up.
No, I just wanted to comment on that. I really liked the ending to that story. It made me laugh.
Oh, that's great, Keisha. Thank you so much.
Keisha, we'll see you in a perspective in mid-October, I think.
Yes, thank
oh,
you.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, she's coming on very shortly, too. We're looking forward to
it, mid-October? Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Around there, anyways. I gotta
All
check
right,
the
well, looking forward to that. I'll
sometime in the fall, anyway.
Okay, I'll definitely try to make that.
Exactly. Trish, who else do we have?
Next we have Angel.
Angel.
Hello, Angel.
Well, I was not planning to stay for this interview, but I love this interview. I love the book. And I have a little bit of an off-topic question if I have time. But first, the question I want to ask you is, who published your current book, Abby? Who was the publisher?
Okay, that's a really good question, Angel. I work with an outfit in Denver called DLD Books, and that's D as in David, L as in Leonor, and D as in David, and they are called DLD.
Explain that to us.
I'm getting to it. Hang on. So good. David and Leonor Dvorkin are this couple in Denver, and Bob and Peter have both worked with them, and so they're familiar with them as well. But they help people publish their books online in print and ebook formats. They work with authors. They're authors themselves. David has published a lot of books, mostly science and science fiction. Leonor has published a few books on different topics, but they work with authors to help them get their work published online. They will copy edit. They will format it and they'll post the books on Amazon and Smashwords. And then, of course, Smashwords makes the books available through other online retailers as well. So that's how, and I have used them. They've published my last 4 books. This one, they published my novel, Why Grandma Doesn't Know Me, The Red Dress. They published my memoir, My Ideal Partner, How I Met and Cared for the Man I Married Despite Debilitating Odds. They've published all 4 of those books. They do wonderful work. I highly recommend them to any author who is looking for someone to help them independently publish their work.
I hope you're listening, Leonore and David. We're giving you a nice free plug, as you deserve.
Bob, I have a little bit of an off-topic question. Is that okay? I can ask it, please?
What is it, Angel?
Okay, the question is about the community, Abby. And here's this curious question. Why did you call your core Abby's alcove? And tell us all about it.
Well, actually, Angel, that is kind of a way too off-topic for this program, okay? This program is about my book and not necessarily about the other community calls. But if Bob and Peter want me to answer that question, I'd be happy to do that. But I'll leave it up to Bob and Peter.
I have no problem, Peter.
Yeah, take a brief run at it, Abby, if you don't mind.
Yeah, we do have another hand too, so just so you know.
How many other hands do we have? Because I don't want to take up too much time.
Right now, we just have one, but as you know, that can change.
Yeah, well, so I'll try to make it brief. So Abby's alcove. Well, this is a call that meets, the second Wednesday of the month through the ACB community. And, years ago, when I worked in a nursing home, I did a lot of music activities with residents where I encouraged them to share their memories, you know, evoked by certain songs. Like I'd pick a topic like friendship or colors or different songs and we'd share memories. So Abby's Alcove is the same thing except without the music. I kind of pick a few topics each month that we can talk about that evoke memories and people can share their memories on those specific topics.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Angel.
And when does that come on?
It's the second Wednesday of the month at 9 p.m. Eastern. So if you subscribe, if you get the daily schedule from ACB Community, just watch that. You'll see the information about that with the Zoom link.
And I get the daily schedule every day.
Okay. Well, on the second Wednesday, just keep an eye out for that.
Thank you for that. And let's take the next question.
All right, Trish. Next person we have is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
Welcome.
Hello, it's Cheryl. I wanted to come on and say hello to all of you.
Oh, thank you, Cheryl.
Abby, congratulations, and I wish you all the best success with your book, as you have done with all your others. So love and to all of you. Thanks.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. No, you don't have any questions?
No, I was listening. I'm a good listener, so I was listening to everything between you guys.
God, that's
I wanted to wish you all the best, my dear.
Well, that's great. If you don't have any questions, that means Bob and Peter and I are doing an excellent job. Nobody has questions. That's good.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl. Anybody else?
It looks like Angel has his hand up again. Go ahead.
All right. Okay, Angel, what's up?
Now I want to go back on topic. So the question I want to ask you is, how, Abby, on your book, did you decide the titles of the stories?
That is also a good question. And that's kind of a tough one. It kind of depends on the subject matter. Now, Living Vicariously in Wyoming, my title story, in the story, I talk about, there's a conversation between a lawyer and his daughter about living vicariously. And he's telling his daughter he thinks that her mother wanted her to be a nun. And so since her mother couldn't be a nun herself, she wanted her daughter to be one so that she could live that life vicariously through her. So that is how that story got its title. And I'll tell you one more, the second one, Gloves. At the time when I wrote that story, I had just gotten a Windows computer. And a friend had given me a book of writing prompts that she had put together. It was like a calendar of writing prompts for each day of the year. And I thought, well, this would be a great way for me to learn how to do word processing in Windows, because I'd been using a Mac. And the commands are a bit different in Windows than they are in Mac. So the story, this calendar is devised so that you write for about, it encourages you to write on this, whatever topic it is, for about 10 minutes. And so what I would do is I would write on these topics for about 10 minutes, and then I would go back and practice proofreading the stories, you know, because when I write sometimes, and everybody else does this, they kind of go quickly fast, you know, really fast if they're excited about what they're writing, and they make mistakes. And so then you would have to go back and proofread. And so I would practice writing for 10 minutes and then going back and proofreading what I'd written. And the particular prompt in this calendar that inspired the story is something like, she went off and forgot her gloves. And this idea came to mind, and that is basically how the story came about. And this is another one that I kind of struggled with. I wrote several different endings to it, and then finally came up with this, the ending that I have now. So, but that's kind of a couple of examples of how I came up with my title. So I hope that answers your question, Angel.
Okay. And we do have another hand, Marlo.
Okay. Marlene!
Oh, Marlene, okay.
Hello, hello. She's also from behind our eyes. Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to say, Abby really has, a clever marketing strategy. She does a lot, with her work and her marketing. And she has a feature called a 6-sentence, word where you have to use the word at least once in 6 sentences, and she does it weekly, and she has lately been able to use excerpts from this book in her 6-sentence stories, and I think that's a great market strategy. I'd also like you to, if you have time, to mention your newsletter with your cat and how else you market. So this book sounds really intriguing, and I'm so glad that I came to hear you. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome, Arlene. Yeah, no, that 6-sentence thing, I do that on my blog on Thursdays. And another blogger, and of course, I also post the prompts to our Behind Our Eyes email list and encourage our members to work on those. And we get some pretty good responses there. But this actually goes on my blog on Thursdays. And another blogger posts a prompt word and asks us to write something in exactly 6 sentences, no more, no less, using that word. And so I've taken to finding the particular word in one of my books, whether it be this one or some of my other books, and then just copying 6 sentences around that word kind of as a little teaser, and then maybe providing just a brief explanation of the excerpt, and in the hope that people will actually want to buy the book so they can find out more about the story. And my newsletter is called, it's called News from My Corner is the official newsletter, and you can, I believe I can give out the address for people to subscribe. Trish, please stop me if that's okay. All right. So it's, you can send a blank email to newsfrommycorner@groups.io. newsfrommycorner@groups.io. Be sure that you use the plus sign and not write the word plus, otherwise it won't go through. And if you're successful, you'll get an email asking you to confirm your subscription. I'll get an email saying you want to subscribe, and as quickly as I can, I will approve you, and you'll get another email, and then you'll be good to go. And I actually write this newsletter from the point of view of my robotic cat, Joy. And so, and usually comes out once a month on or about the first of the month, depending on when I remember to, have Miss Joy write it.
You have a robotic cat?
Yes, I do. Now, she's not actually capable of writing. All she really can do now is meow. She used to be able to turn her head from side to side and purr and open and shut her eyes. But
I think you demonstrated her on a previous episode.
I did. That was an accident a few years ago guest didn't show up, and I suggested that authors talk about her writing or something. And I had her on my lap at the time because I thought, well, she's not, I'm just going to be listening and then I'll ask a question and I'll be muted. What's the chance she's going to start meowing and doing her thing while I'm talking? Well, that's exactly what happened. That was purely accidental.
Yeah, it was cute though.
It's very funny.
Anything else, Marlene?
I think not.
She's gone.
Oh.
Okay, we do have another hand, though. It is a phone number this time.
Okay.
So area code 518-517. Can you unmute and let us know who you are?
This is Mary
Beth. New York.
Who?
Hi, Abby. Mary Beth.
Oh, hi, Mary Beth.
Hello.
Hi, Abby.
Hi.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
And hi, Trish. Just a quick couple questions for you. One, do you have any favorites of the things that you've written before? And do you want to mention what you might be working on in the future? Thank you.
Well, I don't know that I have any favorites. But in the future, I'm hoping to put together a collection of poetry that is autobiographical. I started this years ago and then had to put it aside when something else came up. I kind of went back to it a little bit last summer when there were a couple of chapbook contests that I sent some of the poems to. But eventually I'm hoping this will be a full-length collection. The working title right now is called Inhabit My World, and it consists of poems about me starting from my birth. Of course, that's merely speculative because I don't remember that. My birth up through, high school, college, and, some adult years. And so that's what will be my next project. But when that's going to come together, I don't know, because it's hard for me to, I make plans and the universe laughs. So, but that's going to be my next project when I get around to it.
Thank you, Mary Beth.
And any other hands? No more hands.
No other hands? Time. Just let us know what
not
you
at
see.
The moment.
Okay. Thank you, Mary Beth. Okay.
Feel free to interrupt us. Abby, I forgot. Another major theme in your series.
Oh, Chris, were you trying to say something?
Well, I was just going to say we have another hand.
Okay.
Thank you.
I thought I heard you chiming in, so I thought I better.
No, who is it?
That's great. Okay. It is Nora.
Oh, hello, Nora.
Yeah, hi, Abby.
Hey.
No question, but I just want to congratulate you and thank you for showing us your presentation, and you did a great job.
Oh, thank you, Nora. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Can we do for you? Do you have any questions for Abby?
Not exactly, except maybe I can ask her what inspired her to write.
What inspired me to write? Wow, that is a good question. Now, do you want to know how I got started writing, or just what inspires my stuff?
What inspired you to start writing?
Well, I was back in 2000. Well, I think it was before then. I mentioned the summer camp earlier, and one of the classes I took when I went up there was creative writing. And I kind of got bitten by the bug, you might say, and I was writing stuff. And then, of course, Dad helped me get my first computer, which was a Mac. And that's kind of really when I got into it, especially when I discovered that it's so easy with a computer when you write to go back and fix mistakes and change things. Whereas you're using a typewriter, I often wondered how Ernest Hemingway and Mark Twain and John Steinbeck and some of these classic authors managed to do it. I mean, they had to probably rewrite stuff if they wanted to make any major changes. And if they made typos, heaven help them. But it was just so easy with a computer to start writing. And of course, at the time I was working sometimes 40-hour weeks, as a registered music therapist with nursing home residents. I didn't always have time to write, but I did when I could. And then finally, long story short, when I married my late husband, Bill, in 2005, he encouraged me to quit the day job and start writing full time. And I did, and I haven't looked back. Now, I do still entertain in nursing homes and other senior facilities, but I don't practice music therapy anymore. I'm a full-time author.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Nora?
Abby, can you talk about the role music plays in this collection of short stories?
Well, the one story I can think of where music definitely plays a role is called Magic. And this one was inspired by a memoir I read by NPR reporter Noah Adams. And unfortunately, I don't remember a whole lot about the memoir, except that he talks about how he learned to play the piano. And then I think he and his wife got a piano, and he decided he was going to surprise his wife by learning how to play a specific piece. So I got another one of these what if moments. What if kind of things got twisted after that and it didn't turn out the way the guy intended. And that's kind of how Magic came about. And again, I don't want to give away too much more than that.
Except that I will say it's another example of deception.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That really is a major theme in these stories. It's the, I'm sure there are other examples too that I'm just forgetting about, but
right.
It is a theme, a regular theme in the series. So if you want to learn about deception, or in different guises, this is well worth taking a look at the series of short stories.
We have about 3 more minutes, so there is time for one more participant.
Wow, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, absolutely, Abby. It certainly does. You're right.
Okay.
So anything for the, I'm sorry, Trish?
We do have another hand. Angel has his hand up.
Oh, we'll take it. Go ahead, Angel.
Yes. I have a question. When is your current book going to be available in audio form such as the talking book for
that
talking book players?
That is a really good question, Angel. The Perkins Library, I believe, is going to start recording it sometime at the end of the summer. So I'm guessing at the end of this month. What?
Fantastic.
Okay. And so and it takes them a few months. So I'm guessing by the beginning of next year, for those who use Bookshare, it is available there.
Bookshare is awesome.
It is. Absolutely. I quite agree.
How about Bard?
It should be on Bard. It's hopefully by the beginning of next year. Perkins uploads their books to Bard when they record them. So they should be, I'm hoping, the beginning of next year, if not sooner. Like I said, it takes a few months for them to record it.
So your website again before we wrap up? So
sure. https://www.abbiejohnsontaylor.com. And please feel free to put that in the show notes of your podcast if you can. That will probably be helpful to folks.
And I think if you just type in Abby Johnson Taylor, who is our guest today, .com, it'll probably come up.
It should. Make sure you spell it abbiejohnsontaylor.com. Yeah. If you spell it exactly that way, yes, that should also work.
Right. And Abby is again ABBIE, right?
IE. That's right. Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very, very much, Abby, for appearing today to talk about your latest book. Continued success with that one. Whatever you have in store for your future plans, writing, other books, hopefully, and you do a wonderful job, and we appreciate having you on In Perspective.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
You're more than welcome, and I want to thank Peter as well, and our participants, and of course, Trish and Brad. I'm Bob Branco. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, and have a good week, everybody. Thank you.